From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Gunrunner reaching for the wire. Collectors alongside. And then comes West Coast and War Story. But Gunrunner's on top of the world. He wins the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Arrogate is getting going late now. Collected is in front. Arrogate closing on the outside. It's a Bob Baffert 1-2, but Collected going to win it. Collected and Martin Garcia won the Pacific Classic.
Originating from our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum.
But Arrogate swoops up on the outside. America's King Croesus of horse racing went to the front. 200 meters left to go. Arrogate has drawn away from Gunrunner.
Always dreaming with a 2.5 length lead of 16th to go. Looking at Lee is second. Then comes Battle of Midway Classic Empire. They're coming to the line. And the dream comes true. Always Dreaming has won the Kentucky Derby.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Good morning once again, everyone, and welcome to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, flying solo this morning. As the pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld is enjoying a little time with family and friends for Christmas. So you're stuck with me for the next 2 hours, but it's going to be a busy 2 hours. Several special guests going to be coming by the show, and I'm going to tell you about that momentarily. But first of all, I want to extend a very special welcome to everybody joining us on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, on our affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and across the country, and of course, streaming worldwide on our website at horseracingradio.net. Happy to have you with us on this pre-Christmas edition of the Equine Forum. Now just 133 days, 8 hours, 54 minutes, and 5 seconds away from the Run for the Roses, Saturday, May 5th, 2018 at Churchill Downs. Of course, we'll be there as your official radio home of the Kentucky Derby and the Triple Crown. Also, only 35 days away from the Pegasus World Cup at Gulfstream Park and the start of our 2018 race broadcast schedule. We are 3 days away from opening day of the Santa Anita Winter Meet, which always takes place the day after Christmas. Entries are already out there, so I'm sure many of you have been poring over what is an outstanding nine-race program. And only 2 shopping days left to Christmas. We'll throw that one out there for you, too. So the countdown has begun on many fronts, and going to be a busy couple of hours here this morning. The traditional day after Christmas opening day at Santa Anita, I just mentioned it features 9 races coming up on Tuesday, but 4 of those races are graded stakes. You have the Grade 2 San Antonio, the Grade 2 Mathis Brothers Mile, and a pair of Grade 1s for 3-year-olds, the La Brea for the fillies and the Malibu for the colts. And going to be joined right around 9:40 Eastern time this morning by Santa Anita Vice President of Racing and Racing Secretary Rick Hammerly to go through all of those stakes and tell you what you can look forward to in what promises to be another exciting winter and then spring meet at Santa Anita. Some other big items of note that we're going to talk about this morning. Some news coming out this week, and big news in my opinion. Belmont Park and the NHL's New York Islanders reaching a deal to build the Islanders' new 18,000-seat hockey arena on the Belmont property. Now, according to the governor's office, if you haven't heard about this story, if you haven't read anything about it, the $1 billion redevelopment of Belmont Park is all going to be privately funded by the Islanders and a few other groups that are involved, including Mets owner Sterling Equities. Now, the development is going to feature, how about this, a full-service hotel with views of the racetrack, and that should be kind of neat. It's going to have a shopping area attached to it, kind of in what I see is a souped-up Gulfstream Park layout, from what I could see from some of the pictures. If you haven't been to Gulfstream Park yet, everything that Frank Stronach has done, his vision at Gulfstream has come to fruition, and there is life at Gulfstream Park. I think you're going to see the same thing at Belmont, and people might not realize that since 1972, the team, the Islanders, played in Nassau Coliseum, which was on Long Island, before moving to Brooklyn's Barclays Center in 2015. So everybody excited to get the Islanders back on the island, and going to be joined at 9 o'clock Eastern this morning by Dave Grenning of the Daily Racing Forum, who has been covering that story. He'll fill us in on all the details and tell you what you might be able to look forward to at Belmont Park in years to come. We also lost a couple of legends this week, and we're going to spend time paying tribute to them. Hall of Fame trainer Leroy Jolly, who passed away Monday at Albany Medical Center after a battle with lung cancer. He died at the age of 80. If you missed it, this past week we replayed our trainer talk show, a full hour with Leroy Jolly, and pretty remarkable looking back on his career and everything that Leroy was able to accomplish and just the person that he was. You can't find anybody to say a bad word about Leroy Jolly. And we're going to be joined by Hall of Famer Nick Zito at 8:35 Eastern this morning to look back on Leroy's life and his career. Nick knows Leroy as well as anybody. He worked as an assistant to Leroy Jolly before going out on his own in 1972. They were close. They were good friends. And looking forward to visiting with Nick at 8:35 Eastern. We also lost broadcasting icon Dick Enberg, who at the age of 82 died on Thursday night at his home in La Jolla, California, reports saying a likely heart attack. And Dick Enberg, a huge horse racing fan and an integral part of making the Breeders' Cup what it is today. Of course, he's known for his signature "Oh My" calls, which were simply iconic. But he hosted the first Breeders' Cup telecast on NBC in 1984. And on November 1st, Dick was honored. That's right, November 1st of this year, just a few weeks ago. In Del Mar, Dick was presented with the Breeders' Cup Sports Racing Excellence Award, the first person ever to receive that award. And unfortunately, Dick is now gone and gone far too soon. He served as the host of the Breeders' Cup on NBC from 84 to 1990, and was actually an integral part of bringing Tom Hammond into the mix and convincing NBC to include Tom Hammond on the coverage. Tom eventually took over for Dick Enberg when he stepped down from hosting, and Tom, as we know, went on to have a remarkable broadcasting career. Well, yesterday on ExpressBet Radio, Tom Durkin, who was the voice of the Breeders' Cup, called those races from the very first one in 84, worked very closely with Dick Enberg. Tom took the time to visit with Anthony Stabile on our ExpressBet radio show yesterday, and it was an outstanding interview looking back on the life and the career of Dick Enberg. And I'm going to replay. It was so good. I'm going to replay that interview for you this morning. We'll do that later in the show, right around 9:25 Eastern. So don't miss it. Our tribute to Dick Enberg in the words of the great announcer Tom Durkin. So we'll cover a lot of ground. We're going to try and do as much as we possibly can over the course of the next 2 hours, cover those storylines. But when we come back after our first break, we're going to kick it off with John Hendrickson, who is the president of the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame. Now, a huge announcement coming out this past week from the Hall of Fame. They launched a website called Foal Patrol. And this is a really neat endeavor. I don't know if it's ever been done in thoroughbred racing. We'll ask John that question here in a few minutes. But coming on the heels of April the Giraffe, who really went viral with the birth of April the Giraffe, or April giving birth earlier this year. And what a lot of people do, my mother is addicted to watching bald eagles and their babies and watching them hatch and grow into the size where they can fly away from the nest. She does this online constantly. And now you're going to be able to watch mares in foal with a live video camera in their stall. And you'll be able to watch them starting now for the next 40 some odd days until they give birth to that foal. And then you'll be able to follow the foal. It's a really cool idea from the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame. So we'll talk to John Hendrickson, president of that organization, coming up in just a few minutes and fill you in on the details. But foalpatrol.com is that website. Our poll question this morning, I thought it would be kind of fun to focus on Christmas, with Christmas being just 2 days away. So here's what I want to know. How do you like to handle your Christmas shopping? All right. Are you done with your Christmas shopping already? You still have a few things to get? Or are you one of those people, kind of like myself, that if you're going to do anything, you wait till Christmas Eve and you go on a mad scramble to get it all done? Well, how do you like to handle your Christmas shopping? And we're going to give you three choices this morning. Number one, I was finished on Black Friday. All right. Well, good for you. If that's what you did, if you went out and got it all done early, that's your choice. Number two, have a couple gifts left. Still looking for a couple, but you have a couple already too, so you've done okay. And the last one is, I do all of it on Christmas Eve. Those are the three choices. You can vote on our Twitter feed, at HRRN on Twitter. You can do it on Facebook too if you want to weigh in that way. If you want to contact the show, you can email me, mike@horseracingradio.net, and we'll get to some of those answers as we move throughout the 2 hours here this morning. But how do you like to handle your Christmas shopping? That's the poll question at HRN on Twitter. So far, the early votes coming in, do everything on Christmas Eve. Yeah, I love HRN Nation. Absolutely, do everything on Christmas Eve. By far, the leader in the clubhouse right now. Go to our Twitter feed, cast your vote, and let us know how you like to handle it. All right, we're going to get to our first break. We'll come back. I will kick it off with John Hendrickson, the president of the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame. That's next, right here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Have you been looking for high quality, consistent, and palatable hay, along with a company that offers personal service and attention? Well, your search is over. Washington Hay Company has been feeding your dream for more than 25 years with only the highest quality hay. Their three-tie red, white, and blue string certifies their hay is grown in Washington State's Ellensburg Valley. And with delivery to Keeneland, Churchill Downs, and farms in central Kentucky, Washington Hay Company is feeding your dream. Call Brad Green at 859-588-5480.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
I'm visiting with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how are things in the insurance world?
Things are just fine in the insurance business, Mike. I'm grateful for the people who place their trust in Nicholson Insurance Agency to protect their homes, autos, farms, and horses against financial loss. As you know, we represent many insurance companies, so we can choose just the right company for each client at the right price. We welcome each opportunity to provide quality service to our clients.
So having many companies seems important.
Absolutely. Just like in thoroughbred racing and breeding, competition also works for the betterment of the insurance industry. I am constantly impressed with the ways companies respond to consumer demands with new insurance products and services.
Thanks, Joe. For your equine and general insurance needs, call Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080 or visit us on Facebook. You gotta know Joe.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Hi, this is Larry Colmus, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It's genuine risk in front, three fights late. Here comes Jacqueline Clubman up to the second. Rumbo in the middle of the racetrack is flying. Buck Hill Native drops back. They're in the final furlong. It's genuine risk, and she's genuine. Here comes Rumbo on the outside. Genuine risk is going to win it. Genuine risk by one. Rumbo on the outside, second. After that, it was Jacqueline Clubman finishing third. A tremendous feat. The first filly to run, in the run for the Roses in 21 years. And only the second filly in history to win this mile and a quarter classic.
Dave Johnson with the call of that 1980 run for the Roses. Genuine Risk, Hall of Famer, one of two Kentucky Derby winners trained by the late Leroy Jolly. We'll look back on that life and career of Leroy Jolly with his former assistant, Hall of Famer Nick Zito, who will join us at 8:35 Eastern Time. Stay tuned for that interview. But speaking of the Hall of Fame, joined now by John Hendrickson, who is the president of the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame, and some big news coming out earlier this week, the launch of Foal Patrol. If you haven't heard about it yet, this is a really neat concept, and John is with us now. John, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Yeah, happy to have you with me, and looking forward to hearing the news about Foal Patrol, but let's start with the news of the passing of Leroy Jolly, Hall of Famer. He has his plaque there in Saratoga Springs. Sad news this week, but one of the classiest guys and one of the great ambassadors that we've seen in the sport of thoroughbred racing.
Oh, absolutely. I heard of his illness a few months ago, and we reached out to Albany Med to help him out. He really was one of the great ambassadors. They don't make him like him anymore. We're hoping to do some sort of a service for him, a memorial this summer in the Hall of Fame where he's memorialized.
Yeah, it would be a wonderful thing. And again, we'll look back on that life and the career with Nick Zito, his fellow Hall of Famer, coming up in just a little bit. John, I mentioned Foal Patrol, and people might be saying, what on earth is Foal Patrol? But I went to the website yesterday, and I had a hard time getting away from the website because you have the live video cameras set up in the stalls of so many mares around the bluegrass here and around the country. Tell me the details of Foal Patrol.
Well, we are going to have eventually 8 live webcams of unbelievable mares, accomplished mares, to witness their births. And we've set them up about a month to 2 months before their birthing, and they'll be live 7 to 5. Right now we have 3 Chimneys Farm with Sabbatical. We have Stop Charging Maria at 3 Chimneys. And the third one is, I forget what the third one is right now. But
Center Court?
Center Court, yeah. With G. Watts Humphrey. Sorry about that.
Yep.
And it's really exciting. We have a few little glitches that we had to work out with the timing of the cameras going on and off. But by the end of next week, we should have the 2 farms in New York set up. And we have Labrador, which we're very, very excited about, should be up next week. And we thought of April the Giraffe. 300 million people tuned in to watch the birth of April the Giraffe. And we have a wonderful story to tell in thoroughbred racing, and it's from the beginning. It's from birth. And these mares are wonderfully taken care of. The farms that agreed to allow us to film their mares, they were all in. They realized we can reach the next generation and change the perception of horse racing. It's not just a $2 bet. And I think this is very exciting. It has a chance to go viral, and I'll be happy if the kids in Kuala Lumpur are watching this.
Well, I can tell you, I'm looking at the website right now, foalpatrol.com, and I clicked on Stop Charging Maria and getting a live look at the paddock where Stop Charging Maria is currently walking around. That's at 3 Chimneys Farm here in Versailles, Kentucky. And it's really neat. If nothing else, you want to just sit here and you want to watch the beauty of the bluegrass. What a great camera angle this is, John.
Yeah, and there's also the feeding schedule and the times that they go into the paddock and the times they go into the stall. Generally around 3 o'clock, Sabbatical will be in her stall and Center Court will be in her stall. And eventually Stop Charging Maria, I think, at 3 o'clock will be in her stall as they get closer to the foaling date. And there'll be chances for people to sign up for live updates when they're getting close to foaling and also to win great prizes. Mary Lou Whitney, my wife, and I have offered our Oaks and Derby box on the finish line for next year as one of the incentives for signing up for the alerts.
Oh, wow. Wow, how great is that? Why wouldn't anybody sign up for those? Foalpatrol.com. Yeah, I think Stop Charging Maria knows that we're talking about her. I think that's her, just looking at me now. And now she went back to eating. She doesn't care anymore.
There are a few people that just wanted to showcase trophies and paintings in a museum. And what we wanted to do is showcase and promote the living animal, which is the thoroughbred. And, you know, part of our mission is to educate and promote, and I don't know of any better way to educate and promote than to show these beautiful animals from the beginning.
Yeah, well said. And, you know, a lot of people that aren't here in the bluegrass or aren't around a breeding farm where they live, they don't get the opportunity to see the babies when they're born and to watch them run around the fields. And that is one of my favorite things to do, John, when when the spring hits and all the mares have dropped those foals and you get a chance to drive around and see the babies and get up close to them. It's what the sport is all about.
I've said, if you see a foal born, you'll never be the same. And I think this is so important for us to share. I mean, we're lucky to be around the horses, but a lot of people don't know the beginnings of the horse and how beautiful it is. And we plan after they foal and they wean, we're going to follow that foal and weanling until the mare is a month due for her next one. And so, and there'll be live updates for that foal throughout his career and when he's going to be racing, where he's being broken, if he's been sold. It's just a lot of upside, and I think racing needs a little fun.
Great video quality too, John. I'm again looking at Stop Charging Maria in the paddock at Three Chimneys, and it's as clear as a bell.
Yeah, I have to give credit to G.D. Hieronymus from Keeneland, who really helped out a great deal, and the Jockey Club, who designed the website. Did an incredible job. Everyone dropped everything. We came up with this crazy idea in August. I sent out an email to all the trustees. Within 10 minutes, the Phipps family, through Daisy Phipps, said, we're in. We understand the benefit of this. And so I'm very thankful for the owners.
Yeah, the other neat thing is just down the bottom in the right side of the picture, you have the full countdown. I guess that's the number of days until, say, Stop Charging Maria or one of the mares is scheduled to give birth?
That's correct. But obviously, you know, with the mares, they have their own schedule. And so, April the Giraffe, I think that was like 2 months overdue. So we're hoping not for that. It's generally pretty close, and the managers of the farm, the broodmare managers, know when they wax over, and we are going to be giving updates. And we might even do a foaling party at the museum and have an overnighter.
Oh, wow. Talking with John Hendrickson, the president of the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame, the newly launched foalpatrol.com is where you can go and watch so many mares that are scheduled to give birth over the course of, well, it'll happen in about 40 days or so. At least that's the scheduled date, and we'll see how it goes from there. But it's really neat. And then, John, afterwards, they'll get a chance to follow the baby as well, right?
Oh, that's correct. To its breaking process, whether it be in Florida, Kentucky, and then we'll have their race records and have live videos of when they're about ready to race. We plan on this following the life. And a lot of people say, you know, you only care about their racing career, but that's not true. So many owners have on the back of the Jockey Club paper said, if you can't take care of this horse, we'll bring it back and we'll rehabilitate it into a you know, either a polo pony or a leisure rider, a hunter jumper. And, you know, people want to be invested in the sport, and we want to give them ownership. And so they're going to feel ownership in the horse and realize, you know, this is a beautiful sport and we have a great story to tell from birth.
Yeah, well said. You know, another great place to find out more information about the story of thoroughbred racing is right there in Saratoga Springs at the museum, the National Museum of Racing. And, John, when you get a chance, when I get a chance to walk through even the Hall of Fame and you see all the plaques, and yeah, I know the accomplishments of a lot of those horses and a lot of those individuals, but I think I learned something new every time I do it.
Absolutely. It's a hallowed institution. The staff there works very hard to make sure the history is showcased. But in the lobby, where there used to be a donor wall and just celebrated the donors, we've switched that out to 4 82-inch screens to have one giant screen to watch Foal Patrol in the lobby. So it's become a little bit more alive.
When you talk to people about the museum and the Hall of Fame, what are some of the things that you make sure that you let them know, especially if they've never been there before?
This is our Cooperstown. Saratoga isn't as remote as Cooperstown, where the Baseball Hall of Fame is, and it is a must-see. And we're working very hard to make sure there's programming year-round that if you're on the Northway, you know, we're 3 minutes off the Northway, off the exit. And it really is an important part of the game. And Saratoga, being one of the oldest racetracks, is the oldest racetrack. People need to come and see this. We're across the street from the Saratoga Racecourse during the meet, and this has to be a must-see for the people that go to the racecourse. And we're going to do some cross-promotion with NYRA. I was on the NYRA board for a while, and Chris Kay and Michael Del Judas are terrific people and have agreed that the Racing Museum is too important to the industry to not have that cross-traffic. And I'm just very proud to be involved in it. Mary Lou made me do it. She was riding me like Seabiscuit until I got involved. She said that, you know, her late husband, Sonny Whitney, was one of the founders, and I felt I owed it to at least give it a try and try to bring some energy to it.
Talk a little bit about Mary Lou and her contributions that she has made to this sport, not just in Saratoga, but even on a national level, John.
Well, you know, I'm a little biased, obviously. She is such a special woman. She has a lot of loves, but I think Saratoga and racing are her first loves. And I think she's just so kind, and she's nice when no one's listening or watching. And I just think they just don't make them like that anymore. The Denny Phipps, the Mary Lou's, the Penny Chenery's. It's just so important that we understand that the horse is the most important part of the sport, and we've got to take care of the sports athletes, and then people will come back and enjoy the sport again.
One of the greatest things during the Saratoga meet is on Whitney Day, seeing Mary Lou there and watching her present the trophy. And, you know, I saw some pictures of Mary Lou at the announcement of Foal Patrol this past week. And, John, she looks absolutely remarkable.
Yeah, she looked at me the other day across the table at dinner, and she said, "You know, my next husband hasn't been born yet." So I know she's feeling great, and she's, you know, she is just probably the most remarkable person I've ever known, and I'm just so lucky to be with her. There's an old Mallorcan expression: when you go to bed with someone, you wake up with the same dreams. She makes me want to be a better person every day, and I'm very thankful to God.
Oh, very well said. John Henriksen, the president of the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame, like all the guests who appear on this program, is going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It is the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. You can embrace your passion, and you can wear what you love at EmbraceTheRace.com. John, with that being said, I'm going to ask you one more question before I let you go. What is it about the sport of thoroughbred racing that just makes you embrace the race?
Well, the spirit of the horse really is what keeps me going. To see these magnificent animals giving birth, there's nothing like it. And just to feel the breath when they take their first couple breaths and it's breathing on your arm, just something magical about it. Just within an hour, they're standing. Within the next day, they're running. I mean, it's just a magnificent process, and we're glad to share that, and hopefully others will embrace the race.
Yeah, wonderful words. John Henriksen here on HRN. John, appreciate the visit here this morning. A very happy holidays to you, to Mary Lou, and the entire family, and a very happy new year, too.
Great, and I have a great deal of respect for Nick. He obviously got us to a lot of great places, so my best to Nick as well.
Okay, I'll make sure I pass that along. John Henriksen All right. here on HRN, and again, the website is foalpatrol.com. And again, I'm sitting here watching Stop Charging Maria walking around in the paddock at Three Chimneys. You can do the same. It's a really cool thing. And as you heard John say, he and Mary Lou donating their box at Churchill Downs on Oaks and Derby Day. When you sign up for the updates, you're going to have an opportunity to win that box and that experience. I don't know if it gets any better than that. Foalpatrol.com, not just Stop Charging Maria, but there are a few other mares. Center Court at Shawnee Farm, as we mentioned, that's in Harrodsburg, Kentucky. You have Sabbatical, who is at Claiborne Farm out in Paris. And then there will be others coming soon. Momento de Oro at Old Tavern Farm in Saratoga Springs. La Verdad, remember La Verdad, so brilliant. She's at Addition Farm in Hyde Park, New York. You'll get a chance to watch La Verdad and see her foal when that occurs in 40 days or so. And really magical moment there, and a great website, foalpatrol.com. It is time now for your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you each and every Saturday at this time by the Lexus Store of Lexington. When we come back, going to be joined by Hall of Famer Nick Zito, who will look back on the life and the career of his good friend, that's trainer Leroy Jolly. That's next, right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
Nine horses answered the call to post in early May of 1957 for the running of the singular most famous race in America, the Kentucky Derby. The drama had unfolded in part in the early morning hours on that Saturday on Churchill's backstretch at 7 in the morning, when Calumet Farm's General Duke stood blanketed in the aisle of Barn 15, while veterinarian Alex Harthill and trainer Jimmy Jones lifted his left foreleg to examine an area which had been the subject of speculation and concern since he'd come back from a second-place finish to Federal Hill in the Derby trial the previous Tuesday a little bit sore. the final call was up to Jones, and even though it was only a bruise, it was pretty sore. General Duke had blown out a quarter in 24 that morning and had shown nothing untoward in his movement in that outing, but he limped ever so slightly while being cooled out. By 10 in the morning, the decision was made and General Duke would not go postward this day in the run for the Roses. In the field were Bold Ruler, Indian Creek, Gallant Man, Federal Hill, Betterby, Shanpack, Round Table, Iron Liege, and Mr. Jive. It was a chilly day in the River City of Louisville, the temperature hovering in the 40s, and that gave cause to the holding down of both the crowd and the mutual handle. Bold Ruler was a 6-5 post-time favorite, with both Gallant Man and Round Table highly regarded as challengers. With General Duke out of the race, the other half of the Calumet entry, Iron Liege, was far less regarded and was 8-1 at post-time. Starter Jim Thompson got the field away to an excellent start. Federal Hill, trying to give Louisville its first hometown win since Old Rosebud in 1914, quickly stepped to the front as expected. Down the long straight and on beneath the hallowed twin spires past the stands for the first time, it was Federal Hill, Bold Ruler, Iron Liege, and Round Table in that order. On around the turn, they maintained the same positions with the first half going in 47 flat. Down the backside, both the front-running Federal Hill and Bold Ruler drifted out a little bit. That left just enough room down along the fence to let the wily Bill Hartack send Iron Liege along to within a half length of the lead. The first six panels had been covered in 111-2. As they approached the far turn, Federal Hill slanted back in toward the rail, and Hartack, fearing he would be shut off, took up a little bit and decided to go on around the front runner. It was Federal Hill by three parts of a length, Iron Liege and Bold Ruler, as they hit the top of the stretch. Hartack had utilized another ploy of a crafty reinsman by using both Federal Hill and Bold Ruler as a windbreak for part of the run down the backstretch, and there was a stiff breeze blowing down the backside, and in so doing, he had saved as much of his horse as he possibly could. Midway through the far turn, Hartack turned his mount up a notch and had brought him up abreast of Federal Hill as the two matched strides on down to the 3/16 pole. Iron Liege gained bit by bit and had a half a length lead at the 8th pole, but Bill Shoemaker had Gallant Man going full throttle, and he was eating up ground with every stride on the outside. He was now only a half length behind Federal Hill and a length behind the leader, Iron Liege. He had been 7th after a half, some 13 lengths out of it. He had close to 5th, just 5 off the leader, Federal Hill, at the quarter pole, and was picking him up and laying him down, passing his horses. Just inside the 8th pole, he passed Federal Hill and took dead aim at Iron Liege, with Round Table now 3rd. At the 16th pole, Gallant Man had shoved his nose in front of Iron Liege and appeared to be an absolutely certain winner. Wait just 1 minute. Shoemaker stood up in the irons, mistaking the finish line. That momentary lapse cost him the victory by a long nose as he recovered to get back in full stride too late. Iron Liege, the Calumet's second stringer, with Hartack notching the first of his eventual 6 Derby scores and Calumet racking up its 6th Derby winner, had upset the dope. It was memorable for a couple of reasons. First of all, the absence of General Duke, and, more importantly, the miscalculation of Shoemaker, who stood up a 16th too soon. In May 1957, in the Kentucky Derby, a most memorable moment in thoroughbred racing, and in its own way, a great moment in racing.
Lexus. Once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
There's so much going on in Lexington in December. The holidays. Want to have a holiday party? Go to Tony's. Basketball. Want to watch this great season of Cats basketball unfold? Go to Tony's Steaks and Seafood. The best food, the best service, the family atmosphere you love. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood, right across from Triangle Park. Visit tonysoflexington.com. And happy holidays.
Since 1940, the National HBPA has provided thoroughbred horsemen with a unified voice, representing their interest and needs before state and federal governments and improving business conditions for thoroughbred horsemen and their employees. With a seat on the board of major industry organizations, the National HBPA continues to support more than 30,000 individual owners, trainers, breeders, and backstretch personnel throughout the United States and Canada. Contact CEO Eric Hamelback to let your voice be heard and support the National HBPA by visiting hbpa.org.
Power.
Brody Meister is turning the Arkansas Derby into an absolute romp.
Passion.
Pioneer of the Nile, full stretch, but keeping Chocolate Candy at bay. And Pioneer of the Nile and Garrett Gomez have won the Fat Anita Derby.
Performance.
Royal Delta, my Miss Aurelia, here is a champion again. Royal Delta has won the Breeders' Cup Ladies Classic.
Gainsway Stallion Empire Maker, a champion and sire of 11 Grade 1 winners, including three-time Eclipse Award champion Royal Delta and Classic Placed Bodie Meister, sire of 2017 Kentucky Derby winner Always Dreaming, and Pioneer of the Nile, sire of Triple Crown winner American Pharaoh. Empire Maker's first U.S. crop since returning from Japan are now weanlings and have sold for up to $425,000. Boasting excellent fertility, his 2018 book is limited to 130 mares.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
This is Christophe Clément. You are listening to the Horse Racing Video Network.
Now, I'm a man who's known for his pleasures. These two I train, and this one I drink. Light beer from Miller. It's got a third less calories than their regular beer, and it's less filling. But what I love best is the way it tastes. What a pleasure. Right, guys? Am I a trainer, or am I a trainer?
Light beer from Miller. Everything you always wanted in a beer, and less.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios. That little commercial, 30-second commercial for Miller Lite, you heard the trainer on there. That was trainer Leroy Jolly, and that commercial was filmed and aired back in 1976. The two horses you heard whinny at the very same time at the end of that commercial were 1975 Kentucky Derby winner Foolish Pleasure and Honest Pleasure, who was the favorite, beaten favorite, the following year in 1976. Both of those horses trained by the late Leroy Jolly, who left us way too soon, passed away Monday at Albany Medical Center in Albany, New York, after a battle with lung cancer. And Leroy Jolly, one of the great ambassadors in the sport of thoroughbred racing and one of the true good guys in the sport, and as I mentioned, gone way too soon. To help us look back on his life and his career, his good friend, Hall of Famer Nick Zito, joining us now on the Equine Forum. Nicky, welcome to the show. I wish it was under better circumstances, my friend.
Well, that was great to hear that commercial, Mike, and happy holidays to you and your listeners, everyone around. Merry Christmas and happy holidays to everybody around Kentucky. You know, it's great to hear, actually to hear Pete, your man Pete, your mentor,
yep.
And then also obviously, you know, followed by Leroy. That was really nice. I enjoyed that, you know, so that's cool. You know, there's one thing about tradition. You can't get away from that no matter how I heard something the other day, no matter, you know, how many computers we have or how much technology or, you know, whatever it is, well, you know, we got the world at our fingertips, the good and the bad, but yet we're still not as smart as we used to be. And I think one of the things is those two guys that I just heard, Leroy and, of course, Pete, your mentor, Pete, I think that's what racing really is about. And too bad, like you said, but he was terrific. I tell you, he was an amazing man. People don't know a lot about him. I was fortunate to know him. You're starting to hear how intelligent Leroy is, you know, was. And, that's a big factor. You know, that is a big, big factor. And he was extremely intelligent. Taught me a lot about the business. You know, I was first starting out in my 20s and didn't know much about the business end of it. And, I knew a lot about, horses, walking horses as a kid and rubbing horses and whatever. But the actual business, I didn't know too much about. And he was the one that kind of hep me up about how it works. And, I was very fortunate to...
Yeah, it's funny, Nick. When you started and you were working with Leroy, you were just a kid in your 20s. You weren't Hall of Fame trainer Nick Zito at that point. What do you remember about the first time you walked into Leroy's barn?
Well, those type of trainers years ago, they commanded and demanded respect. I think today it's more wide open. Vets... have a lot to say with the training, managers, consultants. It was just the trainer in those days. It was just the trainer and the owner, and that's the way it is. And, of course, you always dealt with the racing bodies, people in racing. You always dealt with them, farms and, people that would get your horses or send your horses. But it was different because years ago, those type of trainers, like I said, they demanded and commanded respect. And it was a different game, I think, basically. And, it's funny because Leroy was a, Lucas is a great dresser, as everyone knows. Great presentation when he comes to the paddock. Leroy was that way, too. They were just, guys that... you would look at him and you say, wow, that's like Leroy Jolly, And that's what's funny because I felt bad. I had a lot of – I actually went to dinner with him a few months ago. The summer. It was great. I mean, it was great because his mind was still good and he had this great, wit about him and – it was great,
Nicky, what was it that allowed Leroy to have so much success as a trainer? What was it about him as a trainer?
Well, I think the old expression about the detail and, paying attention. And I remember, he'd always come back in the afternoon too, which was great. And, he'd always have, a set list and it was like a detail set list. It was, a lot of management skills that he had. A lot of people didn't know about, but was very, 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 very good. And he's very good at training a stake horse. Extremely good. I mean, he'd have him timed perfectly, if you know what I mean. I don't think a lot of people forget. I think it was recently at Baffert, the Bob's, horse, Arrogate, if I'm not mistaken, he had that track record for a long time in the Travers with General Assembly.
Yep.
I think if you look it up. And he was the same type of deal, had that horse, just that Bob had that Arrogate ready for the Travers, the same type of deal. He had General Assembly, honed, as they would say. He was really good when it came to stuff like that. If you had a good horse, he could train it. That's for sure.
I'm sure you spent a lot of time reflecting on Leroy after getting the news of his passing this week.
Yeah.
Is there a favorite Leroy Jolly story that Nick Zito always likes to tell people?
Oh, it's funny. He's had a lot of wit. I don't know if you remember when Calumet had those red jackets. You remember the Calumet red jackets years
sure.
ago?
Yeah.
They'd always give them out. So I think when George Bush Sr., when the Gulf War was on, and he said all your, whatever they were, would come out, and they all had the Calumet jackets on. he had a lot of wit about them. They were all over the place, he was trying to say, So when we captured the country there, he said they all came out and they all had Calumet jackets on. Funny.
Yeah, really special. Really special. Nick Zito
joining
us.
He just was, lot of people didn't know him, if you know what I mean. He had, I think, kind of a bad rap to a certain degree, you know, years ago. He was whatever. But if you knew him, I mean, you know, you could hear it from a lot of people. I'd tell you, people that knew him, like, they would say, you know, very funny guy, very witty, laugh a lot, you know, very smart, very, very, very smart. I'll tell you what happened. Years ago, Naira was looking for, if you remember, a director of racing they talked about.
Yep.
And I think Charlie Hayter was the president. I forget. I think he was the president then. And I went to him and I said, look, as I had said to Leroy, I said, Leroy, you know, you only got a couple of horses and this. And I said, you know, this is to be a really good thing for racing. You could really help racing, especially New York racing. I said, you could help. And this is, I don't know, time goes by. It's got to be maybe at least way over 10 years ago, I guess, at least whatever that is. And he said, oh, okay, tell him I'll do it. And I went to Charlie Hayward and I told him, never heard back from him. And I don't know if they went to the board and, you know, he had the, like a funny reputation, like, you know, like not getting along with somebody, or I don't know, whatever it would be, you know, standoffish. I don't know.
Yep.
But he would have been ideal. That would have been like, that would have been really cool for racing. Because this guy knew it inside and out. You know what I mean? So he would have been good. And, you know, but he was a great trainer. You know, he was my friend, that's for sure. You know, he taught me a lot about the racing business. And you could hear it, you know, in my voice and the way I feel. And, you know, I'm sad. That's all there is to it. I mean, I wish he could have lived a little longer, and I wish he had one more hit record. You know, I wish he would have had a big horse before he went out. But he had enough, and I'll tell you what was great. He had that commercial. You can't take that away from him. Not too many trainers, you know, have something like that, right or wrong, right?
Yeah, you're 100%
and,
right.
And then the other thing, too, is unfortunately, I think, you know, wasn't his fault. It was really sad. But that match race, which, as you know, we haven't had a match race since, and I don't blame him. But that was awful, you know, because he happened to be on the receiving end. But look who he had. You know, he had an advantage of winning the race. But look who what happened. Ruffian died.
Yep.
The Ruffian in that race. So he was a trainer, you know, of Foolish Pleasure. So there was a lot, you know. But of course, after that, he had other horses too, but he was for me, like I said, he was a very, very classy guy, in my opinion.
Yeah, and he's obviously a great teacher, Nick, because as I mentioned at the top of the interview, you started your career with Leroy Jolly, working with him. You worked with some other folks too, but Leroy Jolly, an integral part of getting you started. He's inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1987. You followed in 2005. So he's obviously a great teacher. Do you remember that day in 87 when he was inducted?
Of course. Yeah. But actually, I remember him being there. I looked at him, and I told him, thank you very much, you know, in my Hall of Fame speech. And thank you for teaching me a lot about the business, and I really appreciated it. And that's true. I mean, that's all true. Yeah, I do. I'll tell you. What can I tell you? I mean, I go way back with him, and some of those victories we talked about, I actually was fortunate enough to have dinner with him. You know, he and his group, and he always invited me. He always was nice to me, and what can I say? I tell you, when I heard about his sickness, Leon Blue called me. You know, Leon Blutzowitz?
Sure.
He said, you know, Leroy's in the hospital. I said, what? And he told me all that he met. And I immediately called the Whitneys, you know, John Hemmickson and Mary Lou.
Yep.
And their friend, Maureen Louie. And they immediately got on him and got him the best of care up there. So I'm grateful for them for that. And they did a good thing. At least they tried to make him as comfortable as he could, you know, the remaining time he was on the earth. So there are a lot of good people around still, and you know, like I say, He just was a cool guy, in my opinion.
Yeah, John Hendrickson joined me in the first segment of the show this morning, Nick, and he wanted me to pass along his salutations. He says hello.
Yeah, he's a wonderful guy. Yeah. Whitney's is no, you know, I Mary Lou got in that. Well, she's in so many things now, but Saratoga has what they call a Walk of Fame, I believe it is.
Yep.
You know what that is.
Yep.
And it's really a cool idea, really nice. And they interviewed me, and I said, you know, you always hear these things about people, but, you know, that's true about Mary Lou. I mean, I don't think there's a bad word. I don't think I've ever heard anybody say a bad word about Mary Lou, you know? So that's great people, but thank you. Tell John thank you, and thank you, Mike. You know, maybe next time I do the show, I'll be a little bit more jovial. You know, I'll have a little bit more something to say.
Yeah, it wasn't the greatest of circumstances, but Nicky, I appreciate you doing it. I know how close you were with Leroy. And look, Merry Christmas, my friend, and get back to work and enjoy, you know, the rest of the year here, and say hello to Kim for me,
no
too.
No question. Thank you so much. And, yeah, that's you look at the good times, and you look at the things, just like that commercial. Thanks for playing that. So thanks a lot, Mike. And everybody in the great state of Kentucky, always thank you.
Yep. Nicky, Merry Christmas, my friend.
Yes, sir.
All right, that's Hall of Famer Nick Zito joining me to look back on the life and career of his good friend, Leroy Jolly, and somebody who meant an awful lot to Nick, and as I mentioned, really got Nick started on that path to what would become a Hall of Fame career. Going to get to another break. I'll come back. I'll get you set for the second half of the show. A lot of great things to come. I'll tell you all about it next on the Equine Forum on HRN, your home for racing's biggest events.
Fans, don't miss opening day at Santa Anita the day after Christmas, Tuesday, December 26th. Come join the fun and pick up your 2018 Santa Anita wall calendar free with paid admission. Come early on opening day. First post time is at 12 noon and admission gates open at 10 a.m. Great racing will be the order of the day at the Great Race Place, as we'll have a total of four graded stakes headed by the Grade 1 Malibu and the Grade 1 La Brea, both at 7 furlongs. There's something for everyone the day after Christmas at spectacular Santa Anita.
Castleton Lions, home to multiple Eclipse champion Gio Ponti and blue-blooded sprinter Justin Phillip, who was recently represented by his first stakes winner at Belmont Park.
Down to the line, what a catch takes the Rockville Center over Morning Breeze.
That game stakes victory by What a Catch comes on the heels of Justin Phillips' daughter, Upset Brewing, putting in a strong runner-up finish in the $100,000 debutante at Churchill Downs. And while Justin Phillips continues his fast start, seven-time Grade 1 winner Gio Ponti continues to prove his offspring can run on any surface at any distance.
And Sir Dudley Diggs from Amiz Gizmo. Sir Dudley Diggs has won the Queen's Plate.
Dre Fong pulls clear of Masochistic. Mind Your Biscuits finishing with a flourish, but Dre Fong's the leader. Dre Fong has won.
Gio Ponti and Justin Phillip standing at Castleton Lions. Visit CastletonLions.com.
Jimmy John's World's Greatest Gourmet Sandwich is Ed speaking.
Yes, I need a sandwich delivery right away.
What kind of sandwich?
I don't care. Just get it to 215 Elm Street right now.
I'm on my way!
Jimmy John's.
Thanks for getting here so fast.
You're welcome, sir. Here's your sandwich. By the way, did you know your house is on fire?
That's why I called Jimmy John's.
Fire makes you hungry?
No, I knew you'd get here fast. Grab a bucket.
We're going to need more than two guys, sir.
You're right. What'll we do?
Leave it to me, sir.
Hello?
Hello, boss? Send everyone you got to 215 Elm.
Okay.
Doesn't matter what kind of sandwich, sir. I'll explain later.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Jimmy John's. Come in.
Sir, did you know your house is on fire?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you know your house is on fire?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you know...
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you...
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Fire department.
Come in.
Sir, did you know your...
It's okay, Captain. We got it handled. Care for a sandwich?
Thanks, but tell me something.
Shoot.
Why didn't you call the fire department first?
I did.
Jimmy John's. Exceptional delivery. Order online at jimmyjohns.com.
Airdrie Studs Summer Front, a gorgeous millionaire son of the Great War Front, has wasted no time in establishing himself as a major force in the commercial marketplace. Known on the racetrack for his electric turn of foot, Summer Front's first crop weanlings averaged over $100,000 with a sensational $100,000 median at the Keeneland November sale, all from an initial stud fee of just $10,000. Airdrie Studs Summer Front. Think about it.
This is Carlos Martin, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
Oh, that half was 43-4. They're coming to the top of the stretch, and XY Jet turns for home with a 2.5 length lead. Ready for Rye is coming. He's moved up into second. He's 3 lengths behind with a furlong to go. On the inside comes Can Dip. In the center of the track, it is Griff. And now reaching for the wire is XY Jet. Here comes Can Dip. XY Jet holds on by a length. And then it was Can Dip, followed by a photo between Griff and Ready for Rye.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum. Mike Penna broadcasting from our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios on this pre-Christmas edition of the show. That was Larry Colmus with the call of XY Jet winning the 2016 Gulfstream Park Sprint. XY Jet is back in action later this afternoon in the Mr. Prospector Stakes, which is race number 10 on that program at Gulfstream. That is the designated contest race in our Road to the Florida Derby Challenge. Don't forget, you can play each and every week now through the Fountain of Youth Stakes to enter to win your chance at a trip for two to the Florida Derby, which includes airfare, it includes lodging, and it includes several other things, including seats in 10 Palms and that great buffet that they have at 10 Palms on Florida Derby Day. Plus, you get a chance to make an appearance on the show with us that morning right here on the Equine Forum and tell us how you did it. How did you pick enough horses to win that Florida Derby Challenge? Well, it's pretty simple. Go to our website right now, horseracingradio.net. You're going to enter your selection for this afternoon's Grade 3 Mr. Prospector, which, by the way, has a post time of 4:37 Eastern. So you have to have your selection in 30 minutes prior to that time. 4:07 Eastern time is the cutoff. So go there now. Don't delay. Enter your selection. Enter an alternate selection, which will be used if your primary horse is scratched. And you'll get points if your horse finishes first, second, or third. This is not the end of the contest. The contest runs through the Fountain of Youth. So if you haven't entered yet, you can still play. Still plenty of time to catch up and win your way to the Florida Derby in 2018. It's all there on horseracingradio.net. Head on over now. It's all free to play, and your chance to win a trip for two to the expressbet.com Florida Derby next year at Gulfstream Park. And keep in mind, that is the Mr. Prospector Stakes, race 10 at Gulfstream today. That's the only race you need to worry about selecting a horse for this afternoon. Hey, you know, Coolmore America's looking at Lucky. Sired his 14th stakes winner last weekend when two-year-old filly She's Pretty Lucky took the Letelier Memorial Stakes at the Fairgrounds. 2017 graded winners from Looking at Lucky include Accelerate, Money Multiplier, Made from Lucky, and Looking at Lee. Looking at Lucky is one of a remarkable, how about this, 7 champion two-year-olds on the Coolmore America roster for next season, and 2 of those will have their eagerly awaited first foals in the coming weeks. Vancouver, who is the champion two-year-old by the Red Hot Medaglia d'Oro, and Air Force Blue, yeah, another champion two-year-old at Coolmore America. Air Force Blue, the best European two-year-old in 20 years outside of Frankel. Their first foals in the new year are coming soon, so stay posted for that news at coolmore.com or via the various Coolmore social media accounts. Busy second half of the show coming up. I mentioned, if you're just joining us, at the top of the show, I talked about the news that Belmont Park has reached a deal with the New York Islanders, and Belmont going to undergo a $1 billion redevelopment project, all privately funded, and they will build the Islanders' new hockey arena, 18,000-seat arena, which will also be used for other things throughout the year, but of course used for the Islander hockey games, and they're going to build that on the Belmont property. And in just a couple of minutes, I'm going to be joined by Dave Grenning from the Daily Racing Forum, who has been covering this story. He's on top of things. He'll fill us in on all the details and what you can expect with this new project at Belmont Park. It sounds like it's going to be really neat and really spectacular when it's finally finished. Also going to look back on the career of sportscaster Dick Enberg, who passed away on Thursday evening at his home in La Jolla, California. Dick Enberg hosted the Breeders' Cup telecast, the first one in 1984 at Hollywood Park, and he would continue hosting the Breeders' Cup on NBC all the way through 1990 before Tom Hammond took over in 1991. Yesterday, Anthony Stabile, the Big A, was joined on Express Bet Radio by Tom Durkin, who called that first Breeders' Cup and so many Breeders' Cup races and those shows and worked beside Dick Enberg on those programs. Durkin joined Big A yesterday on Express Bet Radio and looked back on the career and life of Dick Enberg. This is an interview you won't want to miss. I'm going to replay it for you coming up right around 9:25 Eastern this morning. So stay tuned for that. And Rick Hammerly, the racing secretary, vice president of racing at Santa Anita, is going to be with us at 9:40 Eastern to tell you all about opening day, four greatest stakes races on the opening day program on Tuesday. He'll tell you all about that and what you can look forward to during that winter and spring meet at Santa Anita. That's all ahead. Very busy second half of the show. We're back with hour number two right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It is Forever Unbridled. Abel Tasman charging but running out of time. Forever Unbridled's going to do it. Forever Unbridled has won the Breeders' Cup Distaff.
It is Irish War Cry. And on the outside, Taprit. Taprit has taken the lead. Taprit and Irish War Cry come down to the line together. It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
Originating from our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum.
Shaman Ghost is trying to get into second, then Neolithic. Back forth is Noble Bird, followed by Keen Ice. But what a race! What a sport! What a horse! Arrogate romps in the Pegasus. He won it by 3.5.
They're into the stretch. Good Magic's in front. Good Magic pulls away from Solo Mini, and Boldoro will not get there today. Good Magic's going to win his first race, and he's going to do it in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum rolling on this pre-Christmas edition. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, broadcasting from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios right here in the heart of the Bluegrass. Flying solo this morning, the pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, enjoying a little time off with friends and family for the Christmas break. And he'll be back with you next week on this program and get you set for a very busy 2018 here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I threw out a poll question at the top of the show. The poll question, how do you like to handle your Christmas shopping with only a couple of days left before the big day? And you have three choices. Well, I finished all mine on Black Friday. That's number one. I have a couple of gifts left to get. That's number two. And number three, I do all of my shopping on Christmas Eve. And that would be my selection if I had to make one. Well, so far, that one is the leader in the clubhouse. By open lengths right now, 56% of HRN Nation weighing in saying that they prefer to do their shopping on Christmas Eve. Having a little fun with the poll question this morning, you can vote on our Twitter feed at HRRN on Twitter. You can weigh in on our Facebook page, Horse Racing Radio Network, and you can email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. If you missed any portion of the first half of the program, all you have to do is head over to our website, horseracingradio.net. Check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows at your leisure. It's horseracingradio.net, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Our interviews in the first half of the show with John Hendrickson, president of the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame, and with Hall of Famer Nick Zito, looking back on the life and the career of his good friend, Leroy Jolly. A couple of things that you won't want to miss. Head over to our website, check out the podcast there, and don't forget to enter our Road to the Florida Derby Challenge, your chance to win a trip for two to the 2018 Florida Derby and join us on the program that very morning. Check it all out right there on our website. Well, Belmont Park coming out with some big news earlier this week. Belmont and the New York Islanders have reached a deal to build the Islanders' new 18,000-seat hockey arena on the Belmont property. And One person who has been on top of this story from the very beginning is Dave Grenning from the Daily Racing Forum, and he is with me now here on the Equine Forum. Dave, welcome to the show. Happy holidays, my friend.
Thank you for having me, and same to you and your listeners.
Yeah, thanks for taking a little time. And boy, this is big news. According to the governor's office, I guess there will be, a $1 billion redevelopment of Belmont Park?
Well, that's just for this project. This sort of kickstarts and allows Belmont to sort of look into some development and some renovations to what they want to do with the building itself. But as far as this process, yes, it's a $1 billion project that's funded by the people, the Islanders, and it's a group that includes representatives of the Mets and also Madison Square Garden, which ironically or coincidentally enough includes the Rangers, to move the Islanders here. And perhaps more importantly for Belmont is also some retail and dining development that Scott Malkin, who is the part owner of the Islanders and is very big in the retail outlet mall concept, mostly overseas, but will use some of his acumen here to sort of spruce up and turn Belmont almost, I don't want to say into Gulfstream Park like, but it'll have some similarities, I would say.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because as I was setting this up in the first half of the show, as I read through the stories, Dave, it kind of reminded me of a souped-up Gulfstream Park, kind of the same concept, but with a hockey arena and with a hotel that's going to be on site as well.
Yeah, and from the drawings I saw, the hotel will be, overlooking the track, I think, if I interpreted it right. So,
yep.
The interesting thing here is, as it stands right now, Belmont Racing and the hockey will very rarely mesh. The start of the season in hockey will basically coincide with the last 2 weeks of the Belmont meet, and the beginning of the Belmont meet coincides with the end, I would say, of the first round of the playoffs. So unless the Islanders make a long run into the playoffs, then obviously we're talking down the road, the two shall not meet very often. So you'll have a hotel there that, if you want to come and stay in Elmont, Long Island, you can basically handicap and watch the races from your balcony.
Yeah, it's a good point. Let's lay out that scenario. Let's say that happens, that the Islanders are in the playoffs and they have a home playoff game the same day as the Belmont Stakes. How is that going to work?
Well, at that point, I think you're talking the Stanley Cup Finals.
Okay.
That time, June 9th, 10th, 8th, 9th, 10th-ish, basically you're into the last, if that were to happen, I guess we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. I would imagine that the hockey game would potentially be on Sunday.
Yeah, I would say
Friday.
You're probably right. I think they would work on the scheduling of that to make sure we didn't have that conflict, especially if we had a horse going for a triple crown.
Yeah, I think the Islanders would be more than happy to accommodate in that regard. If they're in the Stanley Cup Finals on game 4 or 5, I think the Islanders would be more than happy to accommodate racing, which is rarely heard in somebody else accommodating racing.
Dave, when is all of this supposed to happen?
Well, the arena is supposed to open in 2020, so I imagine that at least in time for the fall of 2020. For the short term, basically, they're not really going to break ground on anything until the spring. Chris Kay, the president and CEO of NAR, he has this envision of, because it's the 150th running of the Belmont Stakes, he'd like to sort of coordinate the groundbreaking with that event, and maybe even mention the advent, like maybe the morning of the Belmont Stakes. How cool would it be, 9 o'clock in the morning, when we've got a ceremonial shovel in the ground for the arena, and then we have a horse, then we have the Belmont Stakes that afternoon. Now, I don't know how, if it can be done quicker than that, it can start, or it's going to be later than that, but it's probably a 20-month process to build that arena. In 2018, you'll see no changes to the Belmont or the Niagara racing schedule. We'll have the 54-day spring-summer meet, and then you'll have the 36-day fall meet. Now, in 2019, it could change a little bit. I could see a scenario where the Belmont spring meet gets reduced a little bit, maybe where the aqueduct a little longer, hence the reason for building the second turf course. And then maybe 2019 is the year we finally get a longer Saratoga meet, where you get 40 days but run over 8 weeks. And then I'd almost be – I could, the one part of the scenario that I could basically almost guarantee is in 2019, the Belmont Park fall meeting will be run at Aqueduct. Now, the other component of this, though, is the construction, whatever NYRA presents to the state to get Belmont Park renovated, because that's really the heart of, for NYRA, in terms of racing and working with construction companies, that's really the heart of what NYRA is concerned about in terms of whatever renovations they want to do, which they have not presented yet to the building itself, for their own purposes.
In the grand scheme of things, Dave, what does this mean for Belmont Park?
I think it means exposure. People will come, whether it's for an event, a hockey game or a concert or whatever, WWE, whatever it is at that arena. And more importantly, the shopping and the dining. And, how about a scenario where you have, and I'm just going to throw this name out there, I'm not saying it's going to happen, Buffalo Wild Wings up on the property there. And, what if they actually threw in, an area where you a few sand machines or just a patio that you could walk out to, go see the horses in the paddock and then come back and make a bet or make your bet on the grounds of Belmont and then walk back and watch the races there. I just think it means exposure, more people seeing, becoming aware that Belmont is there. And the one depressing thing, as beautiful as Belmont is, you come there, whether it's a weekday or even a weekend that's not Belmont Stakes, it's kind of empty. And this should, at least expose people more to Belmont.
Yeah, Belmont's so big. You could have 18,000 people at Belmont Park, 20,000 people, and it's still going to feel like it's empty because of the vast, expanse of the actual property itself. Dave Grenning from the Daily Racing Forum with me on the Horse Racing Radio Network talking about the deal between Belmont Park and the New York Islanders of the National Hockey League to build the Islanders' new 18,000-seat hockey arena on the Belmont property, expected to open, if all goes according to plan, in 2020, as you just heard Dave say. Dave, how about for the Islanders? What does this mean to them and to the NHL?
Well, for them, it's a homecoming. They were at Nassau Coliseum, which is only about 10 miles away from Belmont. They were there for 43 years. The previous owner, Charles Wang, who still has a minority interest in the team, he proposed a project at Nassau Coliseum that was turned down by the Nassau County voters because they would have had to fund the project. So that prompted the Islanders to move to Brooklyn. Nobody really liked the Brooklyn move. It's not a great hockey arena. In fact, Michael Dubb, a NYRA board member, he had conversation and a realtor developer. He had conversation with Charles Wang before, shortly after they got to Brooklyn about bringing him back to Belmont or bringing him back to Long Island and Belmont. So I think it was always wanting to come back. The Islanders always wanted to get back to Long Island if they could. Nassau Coliseum was downsized, so it doesn't meet the criteria that Gary Bettman has set for having his team there. Now, there is some talk about perhaps for the next two seasons at least playing some of Islander home games at Nassau Coliseum. That's something that the NHL would have to approve. But right now I would say that the Islanders would stay at Barclays at least, obviously, through this season. I would think next season. And then the season that's in question is 19-20, whether they can play all their games at Nassau Coliseum or whether they can work out a deal to play some there and some at Barclays. That's sort of something that the NHL and the Islanders have to work together on.
Yeah, good problems to have. It's an exciting time for Belmont Park and for the Islanders, and looking forward to seeing how this all unfolds over the next couple of years indeed. Dave, let's shift gears for just a minute here before I let you go. We spent some time in the first half of the show. I had a visit with Nick Zito, looking back on the life and career of Hall of Famer Leroy Jolly, who, if people are just joining us and haven't heard, Leroy passed away on Monday at Albany Medical Center after a battle with lung cancer. How about for yourself? Did you have a little time to reflect on Leroy and his career and some of the things that he was able to accomplish?
Yeah, Leroy had his best years probably before I got to cover New York racing. So when I got there, things were starting to wane down a little bit for him. A very well-respected, obviously, and accomplished horseman who still enjoyed being part of the game. I know that these last few years, things are very slow, and I think he would have preferred to have, obviously we've been working with something better horses than he had, but I know that he still liked being around the game. What I found interesting, I guess it was after Harrogate won the Travers last year, and Baffert talked a lot about his admiration and the relationship that he had with Leroy Jolly. I found that to be, I was curious about that, that he had talked a lot about Leroy Jolly. But so his impact on the game was tremendous. Again, when I got there, it was kind of waning down for him, so we didn't have a whole lot of interaction. But I know he was very well respected, and the loss is very sad.
You know, it's interesting. Nick also brought up Bob Baffert's name during that interview, and he did it in particular referring to the Traverse Stakes and Arrowgate defeating or knocking off the track record that was held for so many years by General Assembly. And he kind of echoed those same sentiments, that Bob had this great respect for Leroy Jolly, and that's cool to see.
Yeah, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think he was in the barn, I think where Bob's horses usually come when it comes to Saratoga, in the barn that Leroy had when Leroy was, a regular at Saratoga. So I think that was even more to him. So, yeah, that's right. It was because of the track record that Bob had broken. It did mean it was a special victory on many levels for Bob. And so that just shows you the impact that Leroy had, that, Baffert totally across the country, getting started at a time when, again, Leroy's things were winding down a little bit for Leroy, in terms of the upper level competition. To have that impact is pretty telling.
Do you get a little break now, Dave, before the new year?
Well, we have today's card, which, if you're listening, handicapping, I would handicap for wet track. It is raining pretty well here. We have a 4-day break. I don't know if we have a potential issue through the start of the year here. The Jockeys Guild and Naira are having a little bit of a feud over contract. And so I'm going to have to be on top of that, because there's a chance that once we get to the first weekend in January, if this thing isn't resolved, that we could have a little work stoppage here. So it won't be a long break, but it'll be welcomed 4-day lack of racing break.
Yeah, good point, bringing up that situation with the jockeys in Naira. We'll see how that unfolds. People can read your columns on the Daily Racing Forum website. They can also follow you on social media at DRF Grenning. That's GRENING to stay on top of that situation and everything happening with New York Racing. Dave, you do a tremendous job, my friend, and thanks for all the hard work throughout the year. Happy holidays and a very happy new year.
Thank you very much, and keep up the stellar work for HRN. We all appreciate it.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Grenning here on HRN, and like all of our guests who appear on the program, Dave is going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. You can embrace your passion and wear what you love at embracetherace.com. And hey, by the way, why not get an Embrace the Race e-gift card for that horse racing fan on your list? What a perfect way to wrap up your holiday shopping with a gift card from Embrace the Race. You can go to embracetherace.com to learn more. That Belmont Park news it's awesome. I when Gulfstream Park first announced that they were going to tear down Gulfstream and Frank Stronach was going to rebuild it, he was going to rebuild it smaller, he was going to have a shopping area and a dining area next to it, I was skeptical. I was as skeptical as anybody. And I think most people were. But now to see that vision come to fruition and to see everything that's happened at Gulfstream Park and to see the numbers increasing year in and year out on the racing side and to see that Stronach Group has not lost focus of the racing product, even though they have slot machines on site and even though they have the dining areas and the shopping and everything else that goes along with it, that has only added to the experience of going to Gulfstream Park. And as Dave said, at Belmont, it could be the same thing. If you have a place that is showing the races on site, but not at the racetrack, you can go over, make a bet, come back over, have some lunch, have some dinner, and still watch your races and see if you won. But you don't have to be at the racetrack to do it. But you can make your bet at the racetrack. So the racetrack benefits and everybody benefits. It's a win-win. It's going to be exciting, and I can't wait to see how it unfolds over the next couple of years. Coming up next, going to hear from legendary track announcer Tom Durkin talking about iconic sportscaster Dick Enberg. Dick passing away on Thursday night. Tom had the chance to work with him on the first 7 Breeders' Cup shows on NBC. We'll get a chance to hear from Tom Durkin in that interview with Anthony Stabile that he did yesterday. You won't want to miss it. Some great stuff from Tom. That's coming up next, but first it's time for your Blood Horse news update and a look at the top headlines from bloodhorse.com. Gulfstream announces owners Appreciation Week. This is pretty cool. Gulfstream Park announced on December 22nd that December 26th through the 31st will be Owner's Appreciation Week, with the purse increases from $7,500 to $10,000. Now, purse increases during Owner's Appreciation Week come on top of the 10% purse increase announced for December at the beginning of the Christmas meet. Maiden special weight and allowance races will be increased $10,000 during the week, while claiming races will be increased $75,000. The increases go into effect with eight or more horses leave the paddock. So pretty cool stuff from Gulfstream Park, and well done on their part to give back to the owners of the sport. That's your news update for this morning. Don't forget that the 2018 Blood Horse calendars are the perfect way and the perfect gift to give to any horse lover. This 13-month wall calendar features a full-page calendar and photograph for each month. It's the gift you'll enjoy and use every day. To learn more, all you have to do is go to shop.bloodhorse.com to order yours today. And if your cell phone goes with you everywhere, then you should be taking Blood Horse Daily app with you, too. You can download it free, the Blood Horse Daily app. We'll be back with that interview with Tom Durkin, looking back on the life and career of Dick Enberg next. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Lexus. Once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Penna here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
We've watched him develop into a racehorse.
Into Mischief Wins the Cup, Corfutelli!
Into a sire.
Golden Sensei, scintillating performance.
It is Practical Joke in the Allen Jerkins.
Into a leader. The leading two-year-old and three-year-old sire of 2017. Into Mischief, standing at Spendthrift Farm.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
But Lewis Bay is keeping her mind to business, and she's driven out by Irad Ortiz Jr. Lewis Bay to win the Rampart by a length in the end.
Lewis Bay recorded yet another Graded Stakes victory this past weekend, taking the Grade 3 Rampart to Gulfstream Park while earning a 95 buyer speed figure, making the daughter of superstar Bernardini your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Bernardini is the sire of 18 Graded Stakes winners on dirt over the past 3 years, second only to Tappet. And his Grade 1 winners produced include Cavorting, Alpha, Stay Thirsty, To Honor and Serve, and To Coffle. And only Tappet can top his 7 Grade 1 winners on dirt since 2013. Learn more about Bernardini and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
This is Eddie Delahousie. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They approach the gate. $3 million at stake. They began racing here 90 years ago in 1894. This track has seen the likes of Man of War and Kelso, Sword Dancer, Buck Passer, Dr. Fager, and Secretariat. And the winner this afternoon of this race will join that fast company.
And you don't need to bet on this race to enjoy it. I'm just sitting here. I can't wait for that starting gate to open up and the crowd to yell and come through the stretch. It's at a mile and a quarter, the American Classic distance. And if you love sport, you gotta be waiting for the next 2 minutes.
That's what you said at the start today, Dave Johnson. This is the World Series, the Super Bowl, Wimbledon, the Breeders' Cup Classic, the richest race ever. Slew of Gold, in his final run, is the odds-on favorite. And the man who has the honor of calling the excitement of this classic is Tom Durkin.
Thank you, Dick Emberg. We have two more to go.
Well, that's the way it sounded in 1984 as the horses went to the starting gate for the very first Breeders' Cup Classic. Dick Enberg, Dave Johnson, analyst on that broadcast, helping out. And you heard Tom Durkin as he took the call and the throw from Dick Enberg. That was the first of seven Breeders' Cup broadcasts on NBC that Dick would host before turning it over to legendary broadcaster Tom Hammond, who would take it from there. But Dick Enberg, iconic in the world of sport, not just in thoroughbred racing, a huge horse racing fan. If you haven't heard, Dick passed away Thursday night at his home in La Jolla, California. Early reports saying that it could have been an apparent heart attack as he was waiting for a flight from San Diego to Boston to meet his wife and family for the holidays. Sad, sad news. And Dick Enberg had an impact on so many. Dick covered 28 Wimbledons. He did 10 Super Bowls, 8 NCAA men's basketball title games, including that Magic Johnson-Larry Bird showdown in 1979. And as I just told you, he hosted the Breeders' Cup from 1984 to 1990 on NBC. On November 1st, Dick was presented with the very first Breeders' Cup Sports Racing Excellence Award in Del Mar. And gone way too soon at the age of 80 was Dick Enberg. Tom Durkin took some time to visit with Anthony Stabile on Express Bet Radio yesterday here on the network, and here's that interview for you.
Tom, Anthony, and Steve here on Express Bet Radio. Thanks for some time today.
Yeah, thank you. I'm housebound here in Saratoga. We got a pretty good dump of snow today, so it's nice to be by the fireplace chatting away.
When I gave you a call this morning to secure the interview, you were getting ready to read up on the passing of a buddy of yours, the great Dick Enberg, at the age of 82, passed away from a heart attack last night. Your first thoughts this morning when you woke up to the news?
I was pretty shocked because Dick was in great shape. I mean, 82 sounds pretty old, but, I mean, he was in terrific shape. He played a lot of tennis, and it was always physically fit, and I was just really surprised, you know, that he passed away, given, you know, how good he's looked for so long. I saw him at the Breeders' Cup this year, and he looked great. And, it's just really too bad.
Yeah, Breeders' Cup honored him before Breeders' Cup 2017 this year outside of Del Mar. And it's funny. It's almost like, it's nice to get honored before you leave us. And just in the nick of time, it seems, Craig Favrell and the folks over at the Breeders' Cup able to honor Dick. And you know, Breeders' Cup and Dick Enberg, synonymous, 1984. You are part of the original, of course, racetrack announcer for the Breeders' Cup, November 10th, 1984. And you get to work with Dick Enberg, who had already established himself as, you know, we saw the words Mount Rushmore a lot today. He was already on Mount Rushmore. What was it like, Tom, getting to work with him on that first Breeders' Cup show?
Well, Dick, at that time, I mean, he was, I don't know, I don't know that I could, he was certainly right up there at that time with broadcasters and their reputations, guys like Jim McKay and whatever. He was basically the face of NBC Sports. He was the number one go-to guy, pretty much the way Bob Costas has been over the past few years. He did everything. He did track sports, basketball, football, horse racing. He did everything. And he was a very bright guy and had an advanced degree in college and what have you. And I got to tell you, though, I mean, I was just sent an email to somebody and a text you know, to me, he was the epitome of class. I don't know that I ever saw Dick Enberg in anything other than a coat and tie. And he really reminds a person a lot of Vin Scully. I mean, these guys, they're just class. They just don't make people like this anymore. that have courtly manners and are just kind and don't have a bad word to say about anybody. It's just very positive and all around. Extremely talented guy. I mean, he was a huge talent, and he did not have a huge ego to go with it, which I will tell you does happen to be the case with a lot of people in sports broadcasting that are successful. There's a lot of ego there, but you never saw a hint of that with Dick.
When you go into that first broadcast, do you feel the energy of working with a guy like Dick Enberg? Do you feel comfortable that you're in good hands with him steering that ship, the first Breeders' Cup back in 84?
I never felt comfortable at all during that day. I was 31 years old and 2.5 years out of being the esteemed track announcer at Cahokia Downs. And so I was a bit awestruck by Dick. Now, the guy that was probably everybody's thinking about to call the races then was Dave Johnson, who was heads and miles above everybody else in the business at that point. And I think he preferred to do on-camera work. Now, Dick wasn't completely 100% familiar with the ins and outs and subtleties of horse racing and all the personalities like Dave did. So they were pretty much co-hosts at that time. And that show, they were worried sick that 4 hours of horse racing with only, 25 minutes in between races, they were worried to death that there wasn't going to be enough content. So NBC hired basically every person that could spell the word horse. I'm not sure that I can count them all, but at least a dozen to maybe 14 people on there. It was Tom Hammond's first national television broadcast. He was, knew everything there was to know about horse racing. Dave Johnson was there. We hired a couple guys from Europe, Bruff Scott and Michael O'Hare, Harvey Pack, and Pete Axthelm, Robin Smith, who was a jockey, a former jockey at that point, Sharon Smith, who was working sports on ESPN, a horse racing show every week called Down the Stretch. And I'm forgetting people. There were a couple others.
Dick was an integral part of getting Tom Hammond on that broadcast, was he not?
I believe so, yeah. They both had Dick did all sorts of basketball. And Tom was there in Lexington, and he did basketball as well. I think they may have met doing a Louisville game, a University of Kentucky game. And
you better be careful with that.
Dick had an interest in. I'm sorry.
You better be careful with that. Don't get those two confused.
Oh yeah, I know. I'm going to watch when I walk out the door if I say something wrong there. But anyway, so I think that's when they first met, and Tom took him out to Claiborne Farm for a tour to meet Secretariat, who was still alive at that point. So I think that's how they initially got on there. And, of course, Tom was the low man on, well, next to me. I guess I was the low man on the totem pole. But Tom was just one rung above me. He spent the broadcast on the backstretch. That was his beat. And then he would eventually go on to become one of the premier broadcasters, sports broadcasters in the country and the host of the Breeders' Cup for many years.
You are obviously considered by many to be the best at what you did, certainly on the Mount Rushmore. What do you think?
You know, you're not my agent anymore, Anthony, so you don't have to say all that nice stuff anymore, but thank you. And by the way, I stopped giving you that 10% check every month, so if you haven't seen it for a while, no need, no more coming.
I knew that there was just something, the ExpressBet account was a little light. You're widely considered the best, at the very least, one of the best at what you did. What do you think made Dick one of the best and as good as he was at what he did?
That's always, all that stuff comes down to two things, talent and homework. He just had just a natural talent. He had a beautiful voice. He was from the Midwest, Michigan. Went to Central Michigan University, I believe. And he just had that voice, and he just had a great understanding of sports. He was an athletic guy himself, and he did his homework. You know, he just did the work. There's no getting around that. So he had just the great natural ability. And then he just used his intellect and his work ethic to turn it into, you know, Dick Enberg.
We're talking with Tom Durkin, reminiscing about Dick Enberg, who passed away yesterday at the age of 82. Tom and Dick worked on the first 7 Breeders' Cup broadcasts together. What's going on in the life of Tom Durkin?
I'm doing a little voiceover work here and there. I have a recording studio. Anybody need a commercial, by the way, just give me a call. It's mostly local stuff up here in Saratoga. I've got 2 audio books that are pretty much done, and I'm hoping for the first one to be out on Audible very soon, and the other one maybe within a month. So I really enjoyed doing audiobooks. It kind of fits in really well with my particular temperament.
I saw that one of my favorite characters on the planet, Santa Durkin, made an appearance at the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame a few weeks ago.
Yes, dusted off the old Santa Claus suit, which I've which I put to good use. As you know, Anthony, I used to have some great Christmas parties at my house. I used to live about 2 blocks from Belmont Park, and every year we would take over the neighborhood with people singing Christmas carols, a lot of revelry, let's put it that way. Anthony was part of the band that included Sam the Bugler, and then we
Fran LaBelle.
Fran LaBelle, of course. Yeah, there was all sorts of very good singers, shall we say, and we'd go in the neighborhood, knock door to door, we probably did that for 20 years. And I'm happy to say that despite the fact that we did commit several crimes during that period, no one was ever arrested.
No, we put kids on the back of the pickup in the Santa chair and the Santa suit. And I just went singing. I went traipsing through Floral Park the other day. The Islanders threw me out. So the Islanders are moving in, and the Islanders actually asked me to leave. I didn't get arrested, so we kept that streak alive. But the Islanders just threw me out.
Yeah, well, red letter day, the governor showed up at Belmont Park. How about that?
Yeah, well, Tom, thanks for some time today to talk about Dick. And listen, have a great Christmas. Merry Christmas to you. Don't try to get yourself shoveled out. Get Mathis and LaBelle over there to shovel you out. And I don't know, maybe Joni Lawrence can even pitch in and just shovel you out of that, shovel you out of there up at the spa.
Don't worry, the old Brian Inn's only about 300 yards from my house. There's a pretty good chance I'll be in front of the fireplace there. I'm very sure.
They got that chocolate chip cookie pie is one of the greatest things I've ever eaten. It's Nova Bavarian
thank
goulash,
you,
but it's
thank you, guys.
Good.
I appreciate it. And and thank you, you know, on behalf of a lot of people for remembering Dick Enberg the way you have. He was really just a great guy and gone too soon.
Yeah, gone too soon. Tom, we appreciate some time today. Keep up the good work. The big horse back training. I saw yesterday that he was down at Palm Beach Downs. Of course, Tom owns a piece through West Point of Always Dreaming, so got to be excited about that.
Yeah, Always Dreaming's back, just starting up. Can't say for sure, but I think if in a perfect world, he might have a prep and go to the Met Mile. Don't quote me on that, but I think that idea is at least being tossed about. But he'll tell us when he's ready to go.
All right. Well, best of luck with all the new ventures. Again, Merry Christmas, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, Merry Christmas.
Fantastic stuff from Tom Durkin, looking back on the life and career of iconic sportscaster Dick Enberg. And, yeah, great stuff. Fun interview. Our thanks to Tom for spending a little time with Anthony on ExpressBet Radio yesterday. You can catch ExpressBet Radio Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday afternoons from 3 to 6 Eastern here on the network. That's on Sirius 219 and XM 206, the same channels you're listening to now, and, of course, worldwide on our website at horseracingradio.net. And a quick update on Always Dreaming, the Kentucky Derby winner, Tom, part owner through West Point Thoroughbreds in Always Dreaming. Always Dreaming departed Windstar Farm here in Versailles, Kentucky, on Wednesday, made his way down to Florida to join Todd Pletcher, and the son of Bodie Meister is ready to roll for 2018 and looking forward to that campaign as a four-year-old from the Derby winner, Always Dreaming. Step away for another quick break. When I come back, going to be joined by Rick Hammerly, who is up early in California to be with us. He is the racing secretary and vice president of racing at Santa Anita. He'll fill you in on the opening day card and look ahead to the winter spring meet, which begins on Tuesday. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, your home for racing's biggest events.
Fans, don't miss opening day at Santa Anita the day after Christmas, Tuesday, December 26th. Come join the fun and pick up your 2018 Santa Anita wall calendar free with paid admission. Come early on opening day. First post time is at 12 noon and admission gates open at 10 a.m. Great racing will be the order of the day at the Great Race Place, as we'll have a total of four graded stakes headed by the Grade 1 Malibu and the Grade 1 La Brea, both at 7 furlongs. There's something for everyone the day after Christmas at spectacular Santa Anita.
This three-time graded stakes winning millionaire defeated 20 Grade 1 winners. In the Dixie Stakes, he defeated Canadian Champion and Horse of the Year Up with the Birds and set a new course record at Saratoga. Runner-up in the Grade 1 Manhattan and Shadwell Turf Mile, Ironicus ran seven triple-digit buyers, including this score in the Fort Marcy Stakes. Half to four graded stakes winners, Ironicus has the speed, class, and bloodlines to become the next great sire by Distorted Human. Ironicus at Clayton Farm.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Gulfstream's championship meet is in full stride with a record 94 stakes races worth $28.6 million in purses, highlighted by 12 Super Saturday programs, including the $16 million Pegasus World Cup on January 27th and the ExpressBet.com Florida Derby on March 31st. Every Saturday, come out early to enjoy breakfast at Gulfstream from 8 to 10:30, and be sure to register for the Pegasus World Cup Betting Championship taking place January 26th and 27th with an estimated total prize pool of more than $500,000. For more information, visit GulfstreamPark.com.
This is Jockey Orlando Bocachica, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
Top of the stretch, CZ Rocket turns for home in front. Line Judge battles on toward the rail. J-Boy's Echo trying to rally on the outside. Rocking the Boat is there. Looking for eight, tries to find a seam with Greeley and Ben. Center of the track, it's Just Move On. CZ Rocket, length and a half in front. J-Boy's Echo's been trying to get by, but is still second as they come to the wire, and it will be CZ Rocket by two in the end. J-Boy's Echo was second. Rocking the Boat was third. Greeley and Ben was fourth.
Travis Stone with the call, Churchill Downs, November 23rd. That allowance victory for CZ Rocket, who is trained by Al Stahl Jr. He makes his way to the West Coast this afternoon. Well, not this afternoon, on Tuesday afternoon, actually, for the opening day featured event at Santa Anita, the Grade 1 Malibu for three-year-olds. CZ Rocket, one of nine horses going to the post in that race. It is race number eight on the nine-race program. Jose Lascano will be aboard CZ Rocket, a perfect 3-for-3 to begin his career, and we'll see if he can continue that coming up at Santa Anita. Interestingly enough, all three of his career victories have come at separate racetracks, Saratoga, Keeneland, and Churchill Downs, and now he'll look to add Santa Anita to the top four as well. Rick Hammerly is the racing secretary and vice president of racing at Santa Anita. He'll join me momentarily here on the network right after we remind you that Coolmore America's Looking at Lucky has sired his 14th stakes winner last weekend when two-year-old filly She's Pretty Lucky took the Letelier Memorial Stakes at the fairgrounds. And if you look at the year that Looking at Lucky has had, his greatest stakes winners include Accelerate, Money Multiplier, Made from Lucky, and Looking at Lee. Looking at Lucky, one of a remarkable seven champion two-year-olds on the Coolmore America roster for next season, including Vancouver, who is a champion two-year-old by Red Hot Medaglia d'Oro, and Air Force Blue, the best European two-year-old in 20 years outside of Frankel. Their first foals will arrive in the new year, so stay posted for news on them at coolmore.com. Massive day of racing Tuesday at Santa Anita. It is the traditional opening day of the winter-spring meet, and it kicks off with four greatest stakes races. And to help us decipher what's happening on that day and throughout the meet, here's Rick Hammerly, the Vice President of Racing and Racing Secretary at the Great Race Place. Rick, welcome, my friend. Happy holidays.
Merry Christmas to you. Mike, pleasure to be with you. And, you know, that's that time of year.
Yeah, it is.
And then,
great card.
We say came together well. It came together well. You know, you hope it does. We actually had a little bit of a break this year after Los Alamitos closing. Many times, you know, they would close two or three days before we open, and it just really put the pressure on. But I think we have 8 days off this year heading into our meet. And, you know, couldn't have come at a better time just because of the circumstances out here with the fire that the fire and recovery effort that's been going on. So I think it was very important to get this overnight out and get things back to normalcy a little bit, and you know, that just to let everybody know that the show will go on.
Yeah, well said. And let's start with that for a second, Rick. Give me a quick update on what's happening with the relief effort from the fire at San Luis Rey.
Well, you know, the fire was started, it was December 7th, and so it's been over 2 weeks, and boy, whew, what a lot of stuff's been going on. So we were very fortunate in the whole scheme of things that Del Mar had literally just kind of finished their meet there. They were able to open up their backside, along with some other farms that helped take in some of the horses. But as we get to the present, there's about 300 horses training at Del Mar, and in that median, we had just a tremendous outpouring of volunteers. People were literally lined up out the gate at Del Mar to come in and help, and not just race horses, but you know, other horses that were on the track there. The thoroughbred industry, you know, nationwide and at some points worldwide, just really came to bat for everybody, sending in not only monetary donations, but you know, equipment, food, blankets, saddles, anything you could imagine was flowing into that Del Mar backside for that first week, and you know, it turned into more of a distribution effort. You know, getting that together and you know, making sure the people that were affected most got the help, and boy, they sure did. We had about over $600,000 came in on the GoFundMe site, which is just amazing. And as of Thursday, I'm going to say a very, very, very large majority of that has been distributed into the hands of the people that were affected most, the trainers and their workers and the people that got injured. So a pretty big turnaround. We kind of, you know, cowboyed up and just said, you know, this is the right thing to do. Let's get the money. Let's disperse it. And, you know, it's actually quite rewarding to be involved in some of that, you know, seeing the long lines out there and everybody coming in and signing off and giving them a nice envelope with some cash right around this time of year. So I think mentally things are getting back to, you know, a little bit of normalcy. You know, they'll be able to stay down there at Del Mar for a while until we figure out a plan where, you know, where we're going to rebuild and do some things. But the effort has been tremendous by everybody. And so, like I said, the timing, having this time off, you know, giving everyone a chance to, you know, regroup and rethink. And it was very important to, you know, to get this overnight out. And like I said, just say, hey, you know what? Racing, we're starting a new year. Let's get going. But, you know, the effort still continues. And we're just very happy that it was, like I said, it was very uplifting to see all the help. I mean, just some of the, not talking about some of the scenes there, but just people driving through the uplifting scenes, people driving through the Del Mar stable gate that, you know, just canning off a bag of groceries or, you know, handing a blanket out the window or things like that. So it was actually such a rewarding thing to be a part of. So, you know what? We got a lot of good people out there, not just in our game, but just in general. So it really was a good pick-me-up for all involved. And, you know, I think opening day, we're going to do a little, you know, a little tribute opening day just to kind of honor the horses and the people involved. And I think it'll give us a fresh start. And we're ready to roll.
Yeah, ready to roll indeed. And the Santa Anita Winter Spring Meet begins on Tuesday, the day after Christmas. Four graded stakes. Rick, we don't have time to walk through all of them, but take me through a couple of the highlights and things that people can look forward to when they come out or they watch the racing on Tuesday.
Well, everyone's used to the Malibu and the La Brea being on opening day. We threw a little curveball in this year and put the San Antonio Stakes there. Obviously, with the new Pegasus out there in late January, we figured maybe some of our horses would need a prep. And you know what? I think it kind of worked. You know, we got some name horses in, and as far as I'm concerned, any race opportunity then is a good race. What a war horse, and what a horse this one turns out to be. So we got six horses in there. The favorite obviously is going to be Collected, probably the second best horse in training right now after Gun Runner, and hopefully they'll reunite in the Pegasus. But Collected's in there trying to stretch his legs. You know, he's one of three horses in here that's won four races at Santa Anita, and if you want to narrow it down, you know, Collected, Opportunity, and Top of the Game, who really had a rough trip last time, probably comes down to those three. We run that race a little bit earlier, maybe get some people there early to see that, and as a kicker, Accelerates in there. Of course, the horse that beat Arrogate in his comeback race in the San Diego. So a nice little six-pack to start off the early part of the day, for the older horses. And then I think between the other races, Mike, I think we have to agree that the La Brea is the special race of the day. If you just want to use a little match race type thing, you got Unique Bella, who obviously was the overwhelming favorite in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint and, you know, gave it up, Turner for home, and led to a boxcar payoff by Bar of Gold against Paradise Woods, who's had her two biggest victories here at Santa Anita, the Oaks earlier in the year, and then the Zenyatta later against, not too much company. But she loves Santa Anita. Unique Bella loves Santa Anita. I think that is like the inner story. But if you go a little further, Mike, you have Miss Sunset in here, has won three in a row, including coming off a win at Keeneland in the Raven Run. A sneaky horse in here who I like to take a look at, Estapian. Bob Baffert always gets them ready opening day. There's no such thing as a prep for him. When they show up in the entries, they're ready to roll. I mean, this filly finished second in the test and came back and run a decent race last time. But he gets them ready for these. I think 7/8 will be just fine. She's won twice at that distance. So, you know, maybe get 5-6-1 on a Baffert horse here opening day. I think those are the two kind of key races to watch. The Malibu, of course, is the feature. Nothing real special about it. Some of these races, you have the stars coming in. Hopefully later we'll see some of these horses become stars as they leave the race. But, you know, Chad Brown chips in favorable outcome. You've got Al Stahl shifting CZ Rocket, who, if you look at his work lines, he's been here for a while, so he's gotten to know the track a little bit. A lot of speed there on the outside. Couldn't have asked for a better post. I think a very interesting horse to watch in here is Doug O'Neill's Pavel, who's coming off a mile and a quarter race. Love those turn backs to 7/8, and I think he's got enough speed, so he won't be too far back. But I think this is an interesting horse with a ton of talent, and I think 7/8 will hit him right in the head. And we've got three really full maiden races that are hard to decipher, a couple allowance races. So we're happy we put together a pretty competitive card for people to kick off on Tuesday. And, hey, what else are you going to do on a Tuesday? You know, so
day after Christmas, you might as well come out to Santa Anita or take a look at it and bet it on your ADW. Noon Pacific time is the first post, first of nine races. That's 3 o'clock Eastern. And, of course, those four greatest stakes that Rick just alluded to and walked us through. Rick, I do have to get to this final commercial break before we wrap up the show, but want to wish you all the best, my friend. And by the way, I know that people know from listening to the show, I'm a diehard Steeler fan. I was at the game this past week in Pittsburgh. You were watching on TV. And, Rick, if the ball breaks the plane, it's a touchdown.
Thank you very much. I don't know what happened to that. All I can say is, you know, we were talking about going. That was the game I was supposed to go to, but I got caught up in this fire stuff, so obviously I didn't make it, but probably better. The remote control made it through the game, but all I can say this week is go Bills. And long-term, Steelers were never going to win, beat them two times in a year. So they lost this time, but they know they can do it. See you in New England.
Amen,
Merry
brother.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Rick Hammerly, of course, opening day Tuesday at Santa Anita. We're back with more. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Adena Spring Stallion Point of Entry. A five-time Grade 1 winner, viewed by many to be the heir to Dynaformer's global legacy. The sire of two-year-old stakes winner Glamination in his first crop, along with the impressive filly Moonlight Rain, who defeated males in her debut. On the racetrack, Point of Entry was the first horse since Theatrical to win the New York Turf Triple Crown, accomplishing the feat by a combined nine lengths.
Point of Entry scores to win the Man of War by four lengths. Wild final furlong coming here in the Sword Dancer, and here comes Point of Entry, who's running to daylight.
And they're coming down to the finish, and Point of Entry will go to the Breeders' Cup on a five-race winning streak.
From a remarkable female family, Point of Entry's first four dams are Grade 1 winners and or Grade 1 producers. The heir to Dynaformer and the next global sire is Point of Entry, standing at Adena Springs. Visit AdenaStallions.com.
What's on your mind, kid? Make it fast.
I'd like to work here at Jimmy John's, world's greatest gourmet sandwich shop, sir.
Why do you want to work at Jimmy John's, kid?
I'm perfect for Jimmy John's.
Doing what?
Delivery.
Delivery?
Delivery.
We deliver pretty fast here at Jimmy John's.
That's what I heard.
What'd you hear?
You deliver pretty fast here at Jimmy John's.
Then you heard right.
I'm a fast study, sir.
You know the Jimmy John's slogan?
The Jimmy John's slogan.
Jimmy John's slogan is sub so fast you'll freak.
Sub so fast you'll freak is a swell slogan, sir.
When people call for a Jimmy John's sandwich, they want it fast.
Then I'm your man, sir.
How so?
Because I'm fast.
Fast at what?
Fast at everything.
Can you deliver fast?
I can deliver fast.
How fast?
I can run a 440 in 220.
Minutes?
No seconds.
That's fast. You deliver before?
I delivered newspapers before.
Were you fast?
Very fast.
How fast?
People got tomorrow's paper today.
That's fast.
So do I have the job?
Not so fast. How do I know you're not just some fast talker?
I can get your references.
When?
Now.
These are good references.
Thank you.
But at Jimmy John's, you gotta be more than fast.
More than fast.
You gotta be polite.
Fast and polite.
Fast and polite.
I can do fast and polite.
Okay, give me some time to think it over.
Okay.
Okay, I thought it over. When can you start?
Now.
Now's good. What's your name, kid?
Stefan Avalapadopoulos.
Too long. How about Ed?
That's fine.
Welcome aboard, Ed.
Jimmy John's. Exceptional delivery. Order online at jimmyjohns.com.
Power.
Bodie Meister is turning the Arkansas Derby into an absolute romp.
Passion.
Pioneer of the Nile, fully stretched, but keeping chocolate candy at bay. And Pioneer of the Nile and Derek Gomez have won the Santa Anita Derby.
Performance.
Royal Delta, my Miss Aurelia, here is a champion again. Royal Delta has won the Breeders' Cup Ladies Classic.
Gainsway Stallion Empire Maker, a champion and sire of 11 Grade 1 winners, including three-time Eclipse Award champion Royal Delta and classic-placed Bodie Meister, sire of 2017 Kentucky Derby winner Always Dreaming, and Pioneer of the Nile, sire of Triple Crown winner American Pharaoh. Empire Maker's first U.S. crop since returning from Japan are now weanlings and have sold for up to $425,000. Boasting excellent fertility, his 2018 book is limited to 130 mares.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
I'm three-time Derby winning jockey Gary Stevens.
This is Rosie Napravnik.
Hi, my name is Sean Bridgerman.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia, and I listen to Horse Racing Radio.
Don't forget to head to our website, horseracingradio.net, to check out a podcast of this show and to enter our Road to the Florida Derby Challenge and take your shot at winning a trip for two to the Florida Derby in 2018. It's all there, horseracingradio.net. My thanks to special guest John Hendrickson from the Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame. Nick Zito, the Hall of Famer, looking back on the life and career of Leroy Jolly. Dave Grenning from the Daily Racing Forum. Tom Durkin, who took the time to join Anthony Stabile to look back on the career of Dick Enberg. And Rick Hammerly from Santa Anita, previewing the opening day card. Been a lot of fun. Thanks for being with us here this morning. For our producer, Lee Della Pina, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next time on the Horse Racing Radio Network. A very happy holiday and Merry Christmas to everybody throughout HRN Nation. And, of course, go Steelers.